Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, December 20, 2021. One person was killed during a pro-democracy protest in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
We believe that the revolution has been stolen, and instead of us commemorating something unfinished, we were supporting that revolution.
And South Sudanese authorities introduced vaccine mandate in Juba.
We have seen that in hospitals the cases are increasing, because when we check people using the small temperature machine, we find their temperature reaches up to 38 degrees Celsius.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's National Task Force on Coronavirus has ordered government institutions to ban unvaccinated public sector employees from accessing government offices. The head of the National Task Force on COVID-19 is calling on administrators in institutions of higher learning and government offices to bar unvaccinated people or anyone without a COVID test certificate from entering their premises. The new measures were introduced due to a spike in COVID-19 cases in the capital, Juba. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Vice President Hassan Abdelbaji, chairman of the National Task Force on COVID-19, who doubles as the vice president in charge of the social services cluster, says based on statistics from the task force committee, the number of positive COVID cases has jumped in recent days.
We have seen that in hospitals, the cases are increasing, because when we check people using the small temperature machine, we find their temperature reaches up to 38 degrees Celsius. This also shows a sign of corona, and we want to tell people who are working in public institutions that no one should go for checkup using the small machine, because you cannot tell if the sickness is increasing or not.
Abdelbaji says people with symptoms of coronavirus have shown up at the hospitals, although they have not yet been tested. He says there are dozens of bodies in the post-mortem that have not yet been tested to determine if they died from COVID-19. Compounding the problem is the fact that many South Sudanese are afraid to get vaccinated, but Abdelbaji says people will no longer be able to dodge the vaccines because a vaccination certificate will be required in public institutions and almost everywhere else.
Someone who has not been vaccinated should not come to government institution. And for the people of higher education, you will not enter if you have not been vaccinated. Everyone should be vaccinated. If you are not vaccinated, then every week after 3 days, you should test. You will not be allowed to enter without a test result. Every student at the university should go and receive vaccination.
Abdelbaji urged church leaders to enforce the precautionary measures set by the Minister of Health and appealed to event organizers to ask for permission from the COVID Task Force Committee, which will provide the necessary support to ensure preventive measures are observed. Abdelbaji says government institutions such as the Minister of Finance are often overcrowded and will no longer allow unvaccinated people to enter the buildings.
If you go to the Ministry of Finance, the situation that people are in, you will find more than 3,000 people. We want to tell them that people who should enter the ministry, you must go get a vaccine. If you have not been vaccinated, then you go get a test certificate, but it should be before 72 hours. If you have been vaccinated and you want to enter also, you should show your vaccination card.
Abdelbaji is urging the public to call 6666 if they or someone they know shows symptoms of the virus so that the person can be tested and avoid spreading it to others. In the last 3 days, South Sudan reported 410 new cases, raising the overall total to 13,459 positive cases. 133 deaths have been reported so far. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
Authorities in South Sudan's Jonglei state say at least one person was killed and another injured after unidentified assailants ambushed a humanitarian convoy carrying food items in Duke County. The Commission of Duke County says five trucks belonging to the World Food Program fell into an ambush in Jonglei state. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
John Chatim, the Duke County Commissioner, says five trucks belonging to the Well Food Program were traveling from Tindir Boma to Padiet Payam when they felt in an ambush between Padiet and Mompindagany on Sunday. Chatim says the armed assailant shot and killed one driver instantly and broke the arm of a passenger.
The trucks were taking food aid to Padiet in order to distribute to the people there when they fell in an ambush. One person was killed and another one was broken in the arm. We have sent people who brought the body and the wounded. One vehicle has been left because it was destroyed, but we are now in preparation to go with another vehicle that will go and pull that vehicle back.
Chatim condemned the incident and says it was carried out by suspected armed assailants from the neighboring Greater Pibor administrative area. South Sudan in Focus could not verify that statement. Chatim, who is attending a three-day peace conference in Pibor, says authorities in the Greater Pibor administrative area should do more to stop the young men from attacking civilians and humanitarians in the neighboring areas.
We are telling the authorities in Greater Pibor administrative area that such kind of activities are not good. Attacking even humanitarian workers who are not party to any conflict but only helping vulnerable people is bad. I urge them to work hard to stop these attacks because the criminals live in the areas where there are authorities.
Chatim says it will tighten security in the area to protect aid workers. He says security forces in the area will be directed to provide escorts to humanitarian convoys traveling in the area. Jai Adingora Alwal, the Minister for Information in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, says he was not informed about the incident, but says authorities in his area are concerned about the criminal activities.
Yesterday, a group of Burle leaders, especially the Red Chief and all the Paramount Chief and all the chiefs that are concerned, especially those from the area of Lifuangole and the area of Gumru, were airlifted from here and they were taken by helicopter to Nanam. And they are now there in Nanam talking to these youth about the activities, the harmfulness of the activities that they are doing. So this is an issue of concern. It is our concern as citizens of Greater Pibor and government of Greater Pibor. And on 22nd, the chief administrator is going to go to Nanam because this is the area that is close to that side where those incidents are taking place from time to time.
Marwa Howard, the head of communication for the Well Food Programs in South Sudan, confirms that the WAP is aware of the incident but did not provide a comment. Howard says the WAP is preparing a press statement about the attack. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
The Sudanese Medical Doctors Association says at least one person was killed and more than 100 others were injured during Sunday's protest in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Police used tear gas to disperse pro-democracy protesters who marched towards the presidential palace in Khartoum as they mark the third anniversary of the December Revolution that led to the oust of longtime former President Omar al-Bashir. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Hundreds of thousands of pro-democracy protesters in Khartoum and other towns across Sudan took to the streets Sunday to mark the three-year anniversary of the December Revolution and to show their strong opposition to the October military takeover. Security forces used tear gas to hold back the crowds. The protesters chanted slogans such as, "The people are stronger and retreat is impossible." They demanded a return to a full democratic civilian rule in Sudan. Thousands of protesters in Khartoum crowded into different streets leading to the presidential palace as police fired live ammunition and sprayed tear gas to prevent the crowds from accessing the palace. Despite the use of excessive force, protesters arrived at the southern gate of the palace and began a sit-in, but security forces quickly dispersed the protesters. According to the Sudanese Doctors' Central Committee, 28-year-old Muhammad Majzoub Muhammad was shot in the chest during the incident. A statement issued by the doctors indicates that 123 other protesters were injured, most of them by tear gas. Protester and Sudanese youth activist Muhammad Shukur says despite the use of force, protesters will continue to resist and demand a full civilian-led government in Sudan. He says citizens will not allow the military led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan to rule Sudan again because the 30 years of autocratic rule under President Omar al-Bashir were what he calls the worst experience in the history of Sudan's government.
We believe that the revolution has been stolen, and instead of us commemorating something unfinished, we were supporting that revolution, and they are revolting again to actually overthrow al-Burhan and the military regime that now is taking over the government, because by now it's supposed to be a civilian government, because the military have already finished their term and they're supposed to hand over, but they did not hand over the government.
Sudanese military and civilian forces agreed to a power-sharing government in August 2019. Under the agreement, a military component was to lead the country for 21 months, followed by a civilian component for 18 months, paving the way to a national election. Shukur says he believes one of the motives of the military takeover on October 25th is to block the civilian component from leading Sudan's sovereign council. He says Sudanese no longer trust the military and the political parties because they have failed the people and are fighting over positions and are only interested in their own personal interests.
Sudanese people don't believe in political parties. They believe in independent and technocrats. So if tomorrow they gave them the government, you don't expect political parties will be involved, but the people will choose the independent professional and technocrat who are not signing for any party.
Some Sudanese political party leaders have been calling for an early election to put an end to the political crisis. Shukur says an early election is not realistic because the parties are not ready and the IDPs and refugees have not returned home. He says pro-democracy demonstrations will continue until a full democratic civilian rule is realized in Sudan.
Sudan is going to the right track. Despite the divisions, despite the ups and downs, we are going to the right track because the yesterday protest, it's actually a clear message that Sudanese people will not give up if they don't have a complete civilian government.
On October 25th, General al-Burhan suspended the cabinet and detained several civilian leaders, including Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok. Al-Burhan accused them of playing a negative role in what should have been a smooth transition of government in Sudan. Hamdok was reinstated to his position after reaching a political agreement on November 21st with the country's military leaders, which allowed for the release of all political detainees. Sunday's protest is the latest in a series of protests staged by pro-democracy demonstrators against that agreement. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. A South Sudanese nonprofit in Australia is working to integrate young men caught on the wrong side of the law. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you forgive and forget?
It depends. Like, it depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course, I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things, because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The United Nations says hostility and xenophobia are growing against migrants. Marking the International Migrants Day, the UN warns that stigmatization and marginalization of immigrants amid a raging pandemic is putting many lives at risk. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN agencies report 1/7 of the global population, or 1 billion people, are on the move. This number includes a record 281 million international migrants and 84 million people forcibly displaced by conflict, violence, and climate change. Director General of the International Organization for Migration, Antonio Vitorino, says many migrants embark on dangerous, life-threatening journeys in search of better economic opportunities. Others are forced from their homes because of natural and man-made disasters. He says many of these vulnerable people fall into the hands of unscrupulous people smugglers operating along migration routes worldwide. He says COVID-19 has worsened the difficulties migrants encounter.
Beyond the images of closed borders, separated families, and economic instability, the now two-year-old global pandemic has spawned a new wave of anti-migrant sentiment, and the increasing instrumentalization of migrants as tools in state policy. Both are unacceptable.
Instead of being a liability, he underlines the invaluable contributions migrants make across the world. He says migrant workers, nurses, healthcare workers have kept millions of people safe from COVID. He says migrant remittances have provided a lifeline for families made destitute by the pandemic.
The positive social and economic impact in the countries where they reside and the $540 billion remitted last year to communities in lower and middle-income countries are measures of the industry, entrepreneurship, and community from which we all benefit.
And yet he notes too many governments continue to exclude migrants from their pandemic, social, and economic recovery plans because of their legal status. UN and international organizations are appealing to governments to grant migrants access to life-saving COVID-19 vaccines. To do otherwise, they say, would pose a threat to the health of all people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on migrant issues, a South Sudanese community association in Australia is working with young men and women to stay out of trouble in the Australian cities. Juma Piripiri is the chairperson of the Federation of Equatorial Community Association in Australia. He says the organization has embarked on setting up workshops to help young South Sudanese integrate into the Australian society.
Best people to represent ourselves as a community, and that's why we need the community structure to be strong so that we can advocate through our community structure, whether through government consultation or, you know, representation. Those are some of the opportunities that we managed to get through ourselves, through the Federation of Equatorial Community, to be self-represented in the government national network, which usually is dominated by service providers who are funded predominantly to provide services to newly arrival or people usually of humanitarian entry or people who are granted a temporary visa to be living here under very, you know, restricted.
The Australian government has stopped its immigration program for people specifically from South Sudan. And you said you're working with a lot of community members here. What are you doing to reverse that decision?
So I have two arguments always to make, John. Whenever I speak to government, usually ministers, I will be telling them that, you know, the problem is not a South Sudanese as church. The problem is that the structure has actually failed us. Number one, if you are expecting a child who is going to be you know, born in an expected date, I guess suggested by the doctor, you would have a preparation at least in place to make sure that everything is in place. Now, if you haven't prepared this, do you blame the unborn child to be a failure or the parents will be the failure? So this is one of the questions that I always pose, because it's not our fault, because people coming here, they don't know what they're going to get. And I think it's the responsibility of the government to set up those targeted programs to be able to integrate every individual based on their needs, and it's case by case. It's not a generalization process that every migrant coming through this scheme will be provided X number of services, because it has proven that none of this work for everyone coming here. Therefore, there's a need for that process to be reviewed. And one of the other arguments that I always make is that people need to be involved directly to actually help what is working and what is not working, because that way we can test some of the relevance of the program.
But someone will put you to task by asking you, what are you doing to help young men from your community to stay away from the gangs?
Well, we are doing a lot, actually, John, more than what the government is providing, because we are running a community program. For example, we do have a youth leadership summit that we run, and this program, usually we don't get some time funding. We have to fund it ourselves, and it's very effective program, actually. It brings young people together, and they share some of their own stories that otherwise we wouldn't be able to get from them if you were to instruct them to follow what we wanted them to do. But this is an open opportunity that actually engage with them to find out some of the issues that impact on them and how they would like to see themselves as young, you know, people represented in the community.
Providing legal assistance is one thing, but what about looking at the cause, the drivers? What is driving these young men and women to go to the streets or to join groups that are causing trouble around cities, across cities in Australia?
The core issue here is that there are people who are not taking responsibility, and I'm not referring to young people, I'm referring to the adult, because you as a parent, you should have time with your children. This is the first thing. You should know what the activities are. They're attending school, what are their performance at school, and they also participate in their school meetings where you meet with their teachers to be able to understand some of the issues that are facing them. Sadly, some of our fellow South Sudanese, they're not taking some of these activities seriously. It seems as a waste of time. As a result, the kids ending up not going to school. So kids may leave the house very early in the morning that I'm going to school. Sadly, they end up not going to school. And these are the same kids that end up roaming along the, you know, the suburbs and the streets. They ended up with the wrong crew, and they end up in trouble once.
People who are listening to me and you right now in cities across South Sudan or towns across South Sudan would want to ask you, how does this program that you are working on here translate at home? How do people at home benefit from your program?
Well, you have seen Becca always write letters on a number of issues. We are very open. One thing that as a Equatorial community in Australia, we don't segregate. We engage with all those communities. Even when we are holding those national conferences, we invite every single community from South Sudan, including other communities that exist possible here in Australia. We would like us to work together as a community, and this work needs to be translated back at home. Even if you see in our Christmas message today, we made it very clear. We stand against tribalism. We want unity. We want to see ourselves as fellow South Sudanese to work together in harmony, share love. Historically, we are the greatest people that have been appreciated all over in East Africa, around our neighborhood. We have lost that pride. How can we bring it back? I think it is the time. If we can echo this sentiment every time on what we do, it doesn't matter on what capacity, I think this is the message that everyone wants to hear, because we are now being torn into pieces. If I'm Equatoria, I see my fellow brothers from Upper Nile, for example, or Bahar Ghazal, as my enemies, but they've never been my enemies. It's just a total misunderstanding that we have been misled in that process, and we need to deconstruct this narrative to be able to say, you know what, actually, we could do something together.
That's Juma Piripiri, chairperson of the Federation of Equatorial Community Association in Australia. He spoke with me from Tasmania.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with this Majos and the song Shen Shen. Listening to this Majos and the song Shen Shen. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm not
kidogo. Itama